The Tolkien Road, Episode 231, Unfinished Tales, Part 2. Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 231, Unfinished Tales, Part 2. Greta?
Yeah. Hey.
Greta, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Good.
Yeah, been a snowy week around these parts, hasn't it?
It's been definitely out of the ordinary for Middle Tennessee.
That's right.
That's for sure.
Yeah, we don't get weather like this too often, although it's not as rare as maybe parts south of here. For those of you maybe in Texas where things sound like they're pretty bad, once in a generation kind of stuff, so hope all of you Texans are doing okay as you listen to this. On this episode, we are continuing our After the Silmarillion series by taking a look at the contents of Unfinished Tales.
Contents.
Yeah, I had to get the inflection right there.
Okay.
So
not the contents.
Not the introduction, but the contents.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
got it.
Just want to make sure the inflection distinguished it from the previous episode.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. I think you succeeded.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a shout out to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Lise Yu, Andrew T, and John R. Thank you all so much.
Thank you guys.
Also a shout out to our newest patrons, Yancy E and Durinair. I believe I got that right. Durinair. So correct me if I mispronounced it, but thank you for the handy guide to pronouncing your moniker in a recent email. So
we're all about pronunciation on this podcast.
We're about it because Tolkien was about it.
Exactly right.
So
exactly right.
You too, if you are not already, can become a patron of the Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks, like video recordings of our episodes. Check it out now to learn more about all of the exciting perks we offer. Don't forget, you can now make an annual pledge and get 1 month free. 1 month free.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
It's a very good deal.
You can also support us by leaving a tip, a one-time tip. Just head on over to Tolkien Road, look for the blue button that says leave a tip on a particular episode, and that's pretty much the easiest way to do it. If all else fails, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, right? Best way to support us for free is just to spend a few moments and leave us that 5-star review, or leave us that 5-star rating and a review, and make sure you're subscribed to us wherever you listen to us. And hey, maybe subscribe to us on other channels too. I'm not going to be against that. So, but do that, just like our latest reviewer, Mad Mike LOL.
Oh, that's Mad a Mike cool Lull. Name. Mad Mike.
Yeah, Mad Mike Lull said, great way to spend my drive time. 5 stars. Thank you both for the entertainment and knowledge you share.
Oh, that's cool.
Thank you, Mad Mike.
Yes, thank you.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, YouTube. Hey, we hit 500 subscribers on YouTube, which is cool. So pretty excited about that.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll get to 1,000 even quicker, and I need to get my rear end in gear as far as getting some more videos up there. It's been a couple weeks since we did a video. Things have been a little busy, so just busier than normal. So it's been January, I was kind of like kicking it into high gear with all the podcast stuff and making some videos and everything. And then February has been a little bit more like, the grind, but,
And for a detailed discussion of how much February stinks, you could listen to our previous episode.
This is true.
Yeah.
I think Greta's telling me to move on. All right. But subscribe to us on YouTube if you haven't already. Help us get to that 1,000 mark now. So you can head on over to tolkienroad.com/YouTube, or you can just go to youtube.com. Actually, I don't know if youtube.com/Tolkien Road would work, but the easiest way is just go to tolkienroad.com/YouTube, and that'll forward you over to our YouTube channel. So please do subscribe to us over there.
Yes.
Get those notifications going too. And that'll tell YouTube that we are a up and coming sensation that will make them bajillions, I'm sure, off of advertising revenue.
It's too bad you didn't have the NXS song ready to play there.
A new sensation. Yeah, well,
it's disappointing.
I didn't pay for the rights to play that song. So
we played lots of songs on the podcast that we haven't. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now.
Right, I mean, you can keep talking. You told me to stop talking. I'm
just saying I don't want to get us in trouble because we have played songs on here before.
This is probably going to be a little bit on the shorter side this week. Just because it has been a pretty busy week and we got a lot of stuff we got to take care of this weekend. So but we're going to try to make it a good one nonetheless. So
yeah,
and make sure we cover this topic well. All right. But for our Tolkien quote of the week, here's what we got. This is from On Fairy Stories. We continue with the theme of doing great quotes from On Fairy Stories, of which there are many. Mm-hmm. So this one is from the section on recovery, escape, and consolation. We do not need, or need not, despair of drawing, because all lines must be either curved or straight, nor of painting, because there are only three primary colors. We may indeed be older now, in so far as we are heirs in enjoyment or in practice of many generations of ancestors in the arts. In this inheritance of wealth, there may be a danger of boredom or of anxiety to be original, and that may lead to a distaste for fine drawing, delicate pattern, and pretty colors, or else to mere manipulation and over-elaboration of old material, clever and heartless. But the true road of escape from such weariness is not to be found in the willfully awkward, clumsy, or misshapen, nor in making all things dark or unremittingly violent, nor in the mixing of colors on through subtlety to drabness, and the fantastical complication of shapes to the point of silliness, and on towards delirium. Before we reach such states, we need recovery. We should also look at green again and be startled anew, but not blinded, by blue and yellow and red. We should meet the centaur and the dragon, and then perhaps suddenly behold, like the ancient shepherds, sheep and dogs and horses and wolves. This recovery Fairy Stories helps us to make. In that sense, only a taste for them may make us, or keep us, childish. So yeah, the case for recovery, the recovery value, and what Tolkien means by that from On Fairy Stories there. So, you know, sometimes we can look at the things that have come before us or the things that we're accustomed to, and we lose the value of them. But mm-hmm. sometimes allowing us to see a dragon or a centaur can help us once again, in a fantastical setting, can help us once again to see the beauty of, you know, the everyday, right? To realize the magic of those things that seem commonplace to us. And so that's, I think, what Tolkien speaks of there is a excellent point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that whole idea of taking things for granted, right? Becoming accustomed and comfortable mm-hmm. in what we know, and being challenged to think anew about something. I think that's, that's good.
You agree?
It's good food for thought.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Greta, let's dive into the contents of Unfinished Tales.
Let's do it.
Shall we?
Yes.
All right.
I've been waiting with bated breath.
Good. We'll unbait that breath.
All right. Okay.
On the last episode, we reviewed Christopher Tolkien's introduction to the book and talked about the pivotal role it played in his approach to his father's legacy. On this episode, we're continuing our overview of Unfinished Tales by conducting a survey of its contents. The central question, what is in this book and why? So that's what we're looking at. So last time we talked about where did this book come from as a whole? What were Christopher's reasons for doing this? And we kind of discovered that Unfinished Tales was a pivotal moment in what Christopher was going to do with his father's legacy. All right. So he basically looked at the Silmarillion, which he had worked really hard with Guy Gavriel Kay to turn into a book that, while challenging, doesn't contain any editorial content as far as, you know, saying like, well, this isn't like exactly how my father wrote this. So we get to the Silmarillion and we think we're just getting pure Tolkien, pure J.R.R. Tolkien, that's not entirely true. Although it's not to say that like they just made stuff up out of thin air, but they had to do a lot of work to really put it into a complete form that didn't require editorial explanations and that sort of thing. But with Unfinished Tales, that changed. Christopher decided that he really wasn't entirely happy with how that process had gone, and so he decided to take a different approach and put together just a collection of unfinished tales from his that had not yet been published, and was going to do less smoothing out of the rough edges and just explain to us, use editorial sides to explain to us what we had. So that's what Unfinished Tales is. We discussed that on episode 230, the last episode. So let's look at the contents here. All right. So we start off, part one is the first age. All right. So it's going to proceed with four parts. Part one on the first age, part two on the second age, part three on the third age. And then part four is just kind of some odds and ends that he threw in there at the end. So the first age's part is composed of two chapters. The first is of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin, and the tale of the children of Húrin. So Greta, I want to ask you, what's the first thing you notice about both of these? Just want to see what you notice.
Both of what?
The two chapters that are in the first age. And it's not meant to be a trick question. If you don't know, you can just say, I'm not entirely sure.
I have no idea.
Well, what I was really trying to get at is that both of these stories, not necessarily the words here, but both of these stories are in the Silmarillion.
Oh,
right?
They are.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, right? So,
he mentions that in here too.
Yeah, of course, right?
Yeah, okay.
So we got both of these in the Silmarillion. So the question that might jump into a lot of your minds, and certainly has jumped into mine many times, is why include this here if we already got those you know, stories in the Silmarillion? And really the short answer is that he had to do a lot of editing, especially when it comes to the fall of Gondolin, and a lot of piecing together. And these stories were so important and going all the way back to the beginnings of the Legendarium that Christopher wanted us to have something more akin to his father's original work here, right?
Yeah.
Furthermore, the elder Tolkien had done a lot more work on expanding these stories than what we get in the Silmarillion, right? So he had spent a significant amount of effort expanding these stories to be much longer versions.
J.R.R. had.
Yeah,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
So before he died. And so as many of you might know, there are books on both of these works, standalone books on both of these works that have come out. I think The Children of Húrin came out maybe roughly 15 years ago. And then The Fall of Gondolin was only about, only like 2 or 3 years ago. It's pretty recent, actually. But these, you know, these along with the tale of Tenúbiel, Beren and Lúthien, those three stories have a very high place in the Legendarium, right? They're kind of considered the three great tales of the First Age. You could argue that some other things are in there as well, but these three tales, there's a reason these two and then Beren and Lúthien have standalone books associated with them. And that's because Tolkien had done so much on these over the course of his life, that Christopher judged they deserved their own standalone volumes.
Hmm.
So let's look at Of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin, really. And remember, all of these chapters are going to be a high-level overview. Our goal here is just to kind of do a survey of everything in the book, and some of it's going to be pretty brief. We'll come back to some of it later on, and we'll note where we plan to come back sooner rather than later. So Of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin. So I will say I have not read this chapter. I've kind of glossed over it because, it's like, well, I already know that story, so why would I dive into it?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that I would want to dive into it now that I know and better educated is that there's much more that Tolkien wrote on this, right? And the version of the Silmarillion is really a very pieced together, abbreviated version of the entire tale. So what we get in Unfinished Tales of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin is from an early 50s rewrite of what is essentially Tolkien's first Middle-earth story, right? So in the early 50s, Tolkien began a process of expanding and rewriting the story. There was, you can go all the way back to the late teen, right, to Tolkien's time in World War I, and he had already composed the initial version of this story, right?
And even worked on it while he was overseas,
sounds
like.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But this is truly an unfinished tale. Why is it included when another version of this story was already released in the Silmarillion? Well, we've already kind of covered that, but basically the version in the Silmarillion is fairly short, and Christopher wanted us to have more of what his father had tried to give us with this rewrite expansion in the early 50s. And it's really here that we see this initial approach, that Christopher's new approach to his father's legacy. He wanted to give us, instead of his own spin on the Legendarium, he wanted to give us the textual history of what his father had given us. And so the title it's titled Of Tuor and His Coming to Gondolin rather than The Fall of Gondolin, right? Because for as long as this chapter is, that's as far as the elder Tolkien got, right?
There's no talk of the actual fall.
Right. Yeah. It only gets to the coming, it only gets to Tuor and his coming to Gondolin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal here. The next chapter, The Tale of the Children of Húrin or Narn y Hin Húrin, which I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. Another one I haven't read yet. This is similar to of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin in the sense that it was a rewrite conducted later on in Tolkien's life. But it's a story that goes way back to the early days of Tolkien's Legendarium. And so this one proceeded, the rewrite of this one proceeded much further. And I think, you know, we can appreciate that because with The Children of Húrin, the book that was published about 15 years ago, we actually have pretty much a novel of The Children of Húrin, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've read a good bit of that. I'm such a bad reader. I read in starts and fits, and sometimes I'll have attention on one thing and then I'll lose attention and not come back to it for years. But I probably read about half of that and really enjoyed it. And it's basically just a longer telling of the story that you are probably familiar with by now from The Silmarillion, right? And so with both of these books or both of these chapters, I think what we plan to do is eventually come back and do a focused series on these particular tales, right? So I can envision us and probably not this year, probably a few years down the road, coming back and doing, really spending some time with just the legend, just the whole development of the tale of Túrin, right? Of Túrin Túrinbar, which is the Children of Húrin, right? And just coming back to that and kind of looking at the textual history of it, going through the actual full-length novel publication of it, and, you know, spending a lot of time just focused on that particular tale and its role in Tolkien's Legendarium. And the same thing with the Fall of Gondolin, right? So I think we could do a series on the Fall of Gondolin. I think we could do a series on the Children of Húrin. I think we could do a series on Beren and Lúthien and how these stories developed over time, right?
Oh, that sounds cool.
So yeah. Anyway, that's how I figure we'll probably approach those things. I think these two stories will reappear in various forms in different parts of the history of Middle Earth as we do our survey.
Okay.
We continue our survey through those.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to mention super quick, just something I found kind of interesting in the little bit that Christopher wrote about of Tuor and his coming to Gondolin. There was a note in here about his mother, Edith, mm-hmm. having written out a fair copy of the manuscript, because apparently when Tolkien wrote it, it was kind of messy and written rapidly in pencil.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just kind of struck me, because I don't think of Edith of really being involved mm-hmm. in his writing at all. I mean, surely he bounced ideas off of her and things like that. But I don't know, it just kind of struck me that, she actually sat down and wrote out a nice copy of this mm-hmm. for her husband. And, you know, I feel like it just kind of, it kind of showed me this little piece of Edith that maybe I hadn't thought of existing before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know?
That is a nice little historical note about this that Edith, Edith did that. So
apparently she had neater handwriting than her husband.
Well, yeah. I feel like that's pretty normal. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get yelled at for this by somebody, but
I
just think in general, in my experience, look, I'm just going off my experience, people. Women tend to have better handwriting.
Let's be honest. Your handwriting is nicer than mine.
Yeah, but I'm abnormal in that way.
Yeah, you probably
I think
are.
In like, you know, because I've taught a fair amount of kids over the years and seen a fair amount of handwriting samples. And I even remember from my own days in school, the girls' handwriting tended to be better than the boys' handwriting.
Yeah.
You know? Not always, but tended to be. Credit where credit's due, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true among our children, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We have one that writes, our daughter Lily writes everything like it's a work of art.
Yes, I know. She's an artist when it comes to her handwriting.
Yeah, she's an artist. And then one of our sons, it's like, good luck. If you can even read a word of what he's written. I mean, it's pretty bad, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, but I just loved that picture kind of their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that same kid with the bad handwriting, ask him about his video game achievements, people.
Dude, he's gonna make us millionaires just by like online gaming when he's older, I bet. If the podcast doesn't do it for us first, I mean, I'm just saying.
I hope so. He needs to hurry up with that. All right. So, these two chapters, I have not really spent a considerable amount of time with, but I look forward to doing so with these tales overall and incorporating these two chapters into our studies of these tales overall. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited, especially about Children of Húrin. I feel like we've had a lot of listeners kind of suggest that or mm-hmm. express interest in wanting us to dive deeper on that particular story. And I have no experience with it aside from what's in the Silmarillion. That's yeah. the only little bit of exposure I've had to that story. So I'm excited particularly about that.
I think it's one of those stories that people like wonder, what do you make of this? Because it's a very dark story. I mean, it's a, you know, I guess I would say it's essentially a tragedy. And I think people just wonder like what gives, right? What gives with this? We'll save all that discussion for another time. It's been a while since I even sat down with the chapter from the Silmarillion. So, you know, I'd need to, you know, go back and refamiliarize myself with all the details of the story to be able to, speak much more on it. All right, part two, the second age, a description of the island of Numenor. So we covered this chapter on episode 174. It's a descriptive chapter and not a tale. So
for all you geography nerds.
There you go, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Nerds.
Nerds.
Geography nerds. Mm-hmm. I like geography, by the way. Call me a nerd.
I know. I am.
Representing for the geography nerds out there. All right, it seems Christopher's main rationale for including this was to supplement the unfinished tale of the Mariner's Wife. So we'll get to the Mariner's Wife in just a second, but basically he wanted us to have a better idea of what Numenor was, mm-hmm. right? Like the layout of Numenor. And when you get to Mariner's Wife, you realize there's a lot of like descriptions and place names that it really helps to have a map of it, you know, to
absolutely.
To make it feel more real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this was probably, this description of Numenor was written sometime in the early 60s. And then the map in this chapter, Christopher notes, is based on the only known sketch of Numenor the elder Tolkien ever made. So Elder Tolkien sketched a map of Numenor, and then Christopher reproduces it and cleans it up some and gives it to us here. So
sounds good.
So the map that we have of Numenor is the legit map, right? It's the one from Tolkien's own imagination.
From the author himself.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. Aldarion and Orindis, the mariner's wife. I think we both really enjoyed the series we did on this one.
Yeah, for sure.
We covered it back in a four-part series on this story in episodes 183, 185, 186, and 187.
It was like one of those stories, I think, they were like, maybe we'll do two episodes on this.
Yeah.
And then we're like, it's going to be three. Oh, it's going to be four.
Yeah. We're notoriously bad about expanding beyond but I don't know. When I like a podcast, I like it when they linger on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Hope you guys like it too.
I think it was good. I think it was all really good.
Well, I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it too.
So this work was apparently undertaken at some point in the 60s and was intended to be completed at some point. like so many of things that Tolkien did. He just never got around to it. Right.
This is weird. I feel like it does end.
If you go back to it, it doesn't. Right. It kind of Christopher speculates on how he think it would have ended.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm remembering.
It doesn't actually end.
And I think we speculated too about how we would have liked to have seen it end. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah. So Christopher actually tells us that this story was the least developed of all the stories in this particular collection, owing to his father's use of gradually developing plot outlines and composing. By the fifth round of outline expansion, it was starting to become a narrative. So this is an interesting note. It seems mm-hmm. that Tolkien, in a lot of his writing, would start with like bare bones kind of outlines and then go back and kind of like build on the outline again and still in outline form and collect, you know, start to collect like little pieces of dialogue and that kind of thing. And then he'd go back to it again. And after four or five times of this, he'd start to have kind of the narrative, you know, the narrative in place, right? And you know, conversations, descriptions, these kinds of things were getting filled out. But even there, after five rounds, it was apparently not in a finished state. Christopher says that parts of this are rewritten by him in order to lend the chapter stylistic homogeneity, as he puts it. He makes clear that he is careful to never alter meaning or authenticity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very important to Christopher from here on out is to give us the things that his father wrote. And when he does have to, when he does have to do a little more editing than he'd like to, he makes it clear that he's just trying to keep it, keep things easier, easier to read, which is surprising because I think of any of this, I don't think of any of the stuff from here on out as being easy. Easy to digest.
Mm-mm.
So,
mm-mm.
But I guess it would have been much more of a mess if Christopher hadn't done his work. So,
well, for that, I'm grateful.
I am too.
For him doing his work.
I liked the how he notes the last round of revisions was titled by the elder Tolkien as The Shadow of the Shadow, The Tale of the Mariner's Wife and The Tale of the Queen Shepherdess.
Hmm.
But I like that, The Shadow of the Shadow.
The Shadow of the Shadow.
Yeah.
Teacher of Teachers.
Yes.
Fire, fires. Yeah, I like that too. That's good. I'm really surprised that that this is the least developed.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause just having read it.
It seems very developed.
It seems very developed.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me sad to think that, like, there could have been so much more.
Yeah.
You know? 'Cause what we have is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little mind-blowing to think that it could be even better.
Yeah, this this strikes me as a is one of the major victims of Tolkien's, I guess we could say, is
shiny object syndrome.
Well, yeah, I was going to say his nigglish nature, right? So, you know, referencing Leif by Niggle,
Leif,
right?
Yeah.
You know, just his wanting to always kind of expand out from the center, from the initial idea into something much larger. You know, and this story being itself a leaf off of the main tree of Middle Earth, right? Well, here's another leaf, and he kind of expands around this leaf and keeps going and keeps going, but then kind gets distracted by something over here.
Yeah.
Right?
Wants to make it its own tree.
Yeah.
Own little sapling.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, if you have not read Aldariana and Arrendis, do yourself a favor and go check out Aldariana and Arrendis and listen to our episodes on it. Episode 183, 185, 186, and 187.
Yeah. I think those are we've done a lot of fun episodes, but I think that was probably, those are probably some of my most favorite episodes that we did.
I would agree. Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up in the Second Age is the line of Elros, Kings of Numenor. This is another one we haven't actually covered, although I've wanted to get to it. This was included because it was a clear document of the history of the Second Age. While we haven't done an episode on this one, it seems like one we might tackle as a quick aside sometime in the near future.
Okay.
So, you know, it's especially...
So it's mostly just a timeline. It's not really, it's not a narrative.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's, I think there's a lot of interesting, like, detail that's contained therein.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah. All right. And then last in the, in part two is the history of Galadriel and Celeborn. So this is apparently an essay incorporating various unpublished citations. Christopher apparently, like, he speaks about why he included this. And my take on it is, Galadriel is one of the most complex characters in all of Tolkien's lore, both in terms of her nature as a character within the Legendarium and in terms of Tolkien's varying concepts of her.
Well, when someone lives for thousands of years,
yeah.
I mean, she's going to get complicated.
Yeah. Well, at one point, Christopher notes that she's, you know, she's been alive for at least 60 centuries, which, you know, you, when you put it in that way, that sounds even longer than 6,000 years, even though it's the same number.
Yeah. Yeah.
60 centuries sounds like, dang, you know.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I feel like that's like, it's like, you know, we talk about how many years old we are. I feel like elves talk about how many centuries old they are,
mm-hmm.
you know. yes, Galadriel is 60 centuries old. You know, she's kind of, you know, like late middle age for,
yeah,
for
right.
an elf, right?
it's crazy.
Yeah, so this is another one we haven't read, but this is one that's been tempting me to pay attention to it just because Galadriel is such a fascinating character. And Christopher notes there's a lot of overlap with other legends and materials in this particular chapter because of Galadriel's importance in the Legendarium. Mm-hmm. So I flipped through this one more than once, and there's a lot of things that I think we might end up spending like 4 or 5 episodes on this one chapter when we get to it, because there's so much to deal with in it.
Wow. Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll get to the history of Galadriel.
So we're not necessarily going to do this in order.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I don't want to lose pace with this current series, but my thought mm-hmm. is, you know, maybe we can, like, on the I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much. We might do quick asides here as we need to, because some weeks are busier than others.
Mm-hmm.
We might just plow through, get through the history of Middle Earth, and anything else we're gonna hit with this survey, and then after that, come back and hit some high points, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't plan that far out in general. So I learned a lesson early on with this podcast, not to plan too far out, because I've got shiny object syndrome. So as you referred to it earlier. Yeah.
Yep.
You got to be honest with yourself,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. That's the first stage.
All right. Were you going to say something else?
Sorry. Nope.
Okay. Part three, the third age. So the first chapter here is the disaster of the Gladden Fields, which we covered on episodes 214 and 215. Christopher calls this a late narrative, meaning that it belongs to his father's final years of writing, likely the late 60s and early 70s. This is a fairly complete account of how Isildur lost possession of the One Ring and intersects with interesting issues from the narrative of the Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, I particularly enjoyed this chapter. Again, it was surprising. I think so many people... I think there's a couple of scenes from this legend that make their way into Lord of the Rings, the films.
One of them opens with it, I think.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. At least some of it. And there's other things that we see little glimpses of at different times in the films. But I think it's easy for us to extrapolate from that, to conjecture from that a certain way that these events proceeded. Mm-hmm. And
it gives us a certain image of Isildur that I think is maybe not fair. Because I know after seeing the movies and not knowing a whole lot about his backstory,
mm-hmm.
I was kind of like, well, you just ruined everything for everyone. You could be the greatest villain of all time for all I know.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, after reading this story, it was like, oh, he's actually not that bad of a guy.
Well, and then you learn about his deeds in the late Second Age.
Mm-hmm. Saving the tree.
Isildur, Isildur gets a bad rap because of the main stuff that people know about him.
Yes.
And of course, I mean, he made a huge mistake, right? In that he took the ring instead of throwing it into Mount Doom. But let's be honest, what man wouldn't?
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I mean, he is not. That was not an unusual response,
right?
When it comes to the ring,
he was a victim of the ring, and even when you call somebody a victim, it doesn't diminish their own responsibility for their actions. But anyway, the disaster of the Gladden Fields, I think, does a really good job of fleshing out his story, and it's just another one of those expansions that Tolkien had on a particular item from Lord of the Rings that, when you look at it in more detail, it really fleshes out the verisimilitude of the world, right, of Middle Earth, and will maybe tweak some things, some assumptions you'd made about those events, and put them in a different light for you. So
yeah, good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. Mm-hmm. All right, next up is Kirion and Yorl and the friendship of Gondor and Rohan. So this is another late narrative, less complete than the disaster of the Gladden Fields. Its focus is the history of the relationship between Gondor and Rohan, which Christopher believes was to form part of a more substantial history of the Third Age.
Hmm.
This is one we haven't covered, but another one I could see us covering sooner rather than later. The Third Age stuff is fun because, mm-hmm. We know so much more about it.
Yeah.
And this stuff all relates to Lord of the Rings in some way. So,
right. It's a little bit more familiar.
It's got a more immediate appeal,
mm-hmm.
Who doesn't love Gondor and Rohan?
I was just going to say that. Like, they're so different,
mm-hmm.
but I find them both so intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Next is The Quest of Erebor. We covered this on episodes 190 and 191. This is a fun one. It's something of a prequel to and a retelling of The Hobbit, though from the perspective of Gandalf, after the final victory of over Sauron in Lord of the Rings. Boom, my notes said the final victory of Sauron in Lord of the Rings. Got that wrong, didn't I?
Yeah.
glad I corrected that on the fly. So fans of Thorin won't want to miss this one. So this is a particularly fun tale to consider, and it just gives you a chance to see it gives you a chance to see the events of The Hobbit from an entirely different perspective, and then looking back on their significance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the, you know, for the really the whole, everything that happened in terms of the victory over Sauron.
So this was originally, I think, maybe I misread this letter, but it sounded like it was originally meant to be part of either The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, right?
Where do you get that?
From here in this letter. He said, there are, of course, quite a lot of links between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings that are not clearly set out. They were mostly written or sketched out, but cut out to lighten the boat, such as Gandalf's exploratory journeys, his relations with Aragorn and Gondor, all the movements of Gollum until he took refuge in Moria, and so on. So anyway,
mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? Was it meant, did he originally write it thinking it was going to go into the book?
I think he when he began writing the appendices for Lord of the Rings in the 50s, I think he started expanding and on like outlines of different things and trying to connect to the years between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, as well as things going on during The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
I see.
And going into a lot more of the backstory. And and Christopher says at one point, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but at one point in the introduction to Unfinished Tales, he talks about his father's kind of love with going back and revisiting old stories from different perspectives and in certain retellings.
I see. Okay.
And so I don't know that this was ever intended. It may have been intended to be part of an appendices at one point.
I see.
But I don't know that it was intended to be
actually incorporated into the stories. Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, let's see. Yeah. So this is one, like I said, we covered it on 190 and 191, so you can go back there and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The Hunt for the Ring. There were a lot of writings Christopher found focused on the year Third Age 3018, which is the year, I think that's the year right before the start of Lord of the Rings, or it's concurrent with the beginning of the Lord of the Rings. I don't have it in front of me right now. But this chapter brings many of them together, right? So it brings many of these writings from the year Third Age 3018 together. The focus is on the events surrounding the search for Gollum, as well as the ring wraiths and their journeys in search of the One Ring, right? So, but we get, I've actually read this a couple of times. We were thinking about doing it a few episodes ago, but some other stuff came up we wanted to focus on. But I have read this one, and there's a lot that goes on in it, but I remember it concerns the ring wraiths very heavily. And I think both Saruman and Wormtongue Grima make make significant appearances in it as well.
Ooh.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So
sounds
interesting
exciting
stuff, but definitely one, this is definitely one we'll be covering pretty soon, I would say.
Okay.
Try to hit it this year. All right. And then the last in the Third Age is the Battles of the Fords of Isen. So heads up to all of you Rohan fans. There's a good bit to say about them in this chapter. Christopher calls this a severe historical analysis.
That sounds scary.
Severe historical analysis.
I'm like, historical analysis for me is like bad enough. Then you like add the adjective severe to it. And I'm like,
I feel like this is one of those things that an English gentleman, would say severe historical analysis, and the rest of us would go gasp, whoa,
yeah,
severe, that's bad.
Yeah.
But I think what he means is
in depth.
Yeah, like, and it's like exacting.
It's thorough.
It's thorough, exacting.
Exhaustive.
But
never
it's
ending.
Like severe historical analysis, like condemning every character, like Rohan's the worst, right? Look at what they did here, bunch of jerks. Right?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking more along the lines of like infinite.
Yeah.
Like to me, when I hear severe historical analysis, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just going to blow my mind and give me a headache.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think severe is more along those lines, right? It's starting to get kind of academic, right?
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He also says of this one that it's only unfinished in the most obvious sense. So apparently it's pretty close to completion as far as what it is. But I have not spent really any time with this one, but because it's Rohan and a Third Age story that relates very closely to the Lord of the Rings, I'm looking forward to it. So hopefully we'll get to it soon.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Because you like severe historical analyses.
I do. I love severe. The severer, the better. Yeah. You'll
have to give me plenty of notice on this one.
I should move to Sevierville.
To Sevierville. We could go to Dollywood whenever we wanted. That's
right. There's a place in Tennessee called Sevierville. It's not spelled like Sevier. Yeah, it looks like it doesn't look like you'd say it Sevierville, but that's how they say it apparently. And that's where like Dolly Parton's from.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not all bad.
Oh, it's great.
It's not severe.
It's a nice. It's actually a nice little place.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Props to Dolly Parton for taking care of her home digs. Right.
That's right.
Local girl done good. Mm-hmm. And she
giving back.
Paid it forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's right.
All right. So that's the Battle of the Forts. Wow, I never thought Dolly Parton would come up on an episode of
Tilted. That's pretty amazing.
So
the connections we can make on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're amazing.
We are amazing. Therefore, our connections, it just follows that they would be amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Part four, appendix. Tolkien loved his appendices.
He did.
And it apparently rubbed off on the elder, on the younger Tolkien, right, Christopher? So, the Druidine. In this chapter, we see how in his later writings, Tolkien began to expand the history of the wild men of the Druidan forest. And this is another promising extension of the mythology of the Lord of the Rings that we have not yet gotten to, but I hope to get to sooner than later. Another one I'd like to get to this year if we can. So.
Okay, are these the Dunedain?
These are not the Dunedain. Do not get the Druidon confused with the Dunedain. Completely separate things. The Dunedain are the people of Numenor. Right.
Okay.
The Druidon are the wild men of the forests, like to the northwest of Gondor. Okay. Do you remember when reading The Lord of the Rings, it's got like the Pukulmen, right? Do you remember that? Like with the it's like these like weird statues that they see like when they're going towards the paths of the dead.
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of the spooky stuff that mm-hmm. happens there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got they don't really show this in the movie, but there's this talk of like these as they get closer to Gondor, these like drums coming from the forests. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's like there's these men, the Druidon, that live in the forest, and they're kind of the wild men, right? So
I see. It's
an interesting thing. It's been a while since we covered that from Lord of the Rings, but this is one of those things that Tolkien apparently expanded on in his later writings, who these people were, and even tried to connect them back to the Silmarillion, back to the stories of Beleriand in the First Age. So I don't know much about this chapter beyond that, but I'm looking forward to covering it at some
mm-hmm.
point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up in the appendices is the Istari, which we covered on episode 70. It's about the wizards, so this is like the first one that you want to read from Unfinished Tales, but of course Christopher buried it like towards the end. We learned a good deal in this chapter about the Valinorian origins of Gandalf, Saruman, Radagast, and of the two mysterious blue wizards, so which we all want to know much more about, mm-hmm. but Tolkien didn't tell us much. But anyway, Christopher's elliptical notes on this, I take that this comes from Tolkien's original mid-50s draft for the appendix of Lord of the Rings. So, or at least began there and then was expanded later like he did with a lot of other things in this volume in the early 60s.
Mm.
So definitely check this one out if you haven't already. Again, that's episode 70. If you love wizards, which I mean,
how can you not love Lord of the Rings,
then like obviously you probably love wizards. So if you haven't read of the Istari, it's worth your time. It's not easy. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff mm-hmm. in there. Right?
And you have our episode to help you out.
Absolutely.
So, no excuses.
No excuses. Make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The Palantiri, episode 98. We cover this one on episode 98. These writings date from the late 60s revisions of The Lord of the Rings. Tolkien expanded a good bit on the lore of the Palantiri, and Christopher here compiles these writings into one continuous essay. So,
yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
So we've covered that, and then
those are the balls, right?
Yeah, the orbs.
The orbs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
seeing
like,
stones.
The magic eight balls, for lack of a better term.
There you go.
Yeah.
The seeing stones.
Seeing stones.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, and then the last thing that Christopher notes in the introduction is a few things on the map of Middle-earth that's included in this volume. In particular, he amended the map of Middle-earth that's included in Lord of the Rings to include places named in Unfinished Tales that were not mentioned in Lord of the Rings, right? So it's It doesn't make a lot of changes as far as the landscapes or anything, but it adds some place names in and corrects and makes some corrections here and there as well. One other really interesting thing, and you can see this if you look at the map, I'm kind of wondering actually if this map is like not entirely complete, that there's like the edges were cut off on the one I have in my hands. But this island up in the northwest, Himling, right? Just off the coast there. So he notes, I love that there's these little like islands that just are out in the middle of the Great Sea, right? You're like, what is going on with that? There's got to be a story there, right? Yeah. That's, you know, something interesting about that place. Yeah. Well, Christopher tells us in this note that Himling is, you know what? Actually, I wrote in my notes, I don't want to spoil it for you guys. Go read it, right? It's really interesting what Himling is, this island Himling on the map here. He tells us in what, you know, what it apparently is, and it relates to the First Age.
In the chapter?
Yes.
The map of in the chapter?
Like, in the introduction.
Oh, in the introduction.
He tells us what the map, what that island is, right?
Does he? I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, I'll show you right here.
No, I believe you. I believe you, but I'm going to go back and look at it right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. All right. Well, so there you go. That's our overview of the content of Unfinished Tales.
That's good. That was really good.
Yeah, Greta, any final thoughts?
No. I think that was well done.
Party on.
Yeah, party on.
All right. Okay, so again, we're fairly short on time this week. And though our correspondence backlog is again expanding, it will have to wait until the next episode. As always, we do love hearing from you, and we do our best to respond in a timely manner, so keep it coming. My apologies if you wrote me a while ago and I haven't gotten back to you again. I will get back. I will do my best to get back to you sooner rather than later, and I appreciate everything everybody's
we both
sends our
do
way.
Yeah, we yeah. both do. It's really cool.
Absolutely.
To hear from people that listen to us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all. On our next episode, we will begin our survey of the history of Middle-earth with the Book of Lost Tales, Part 1.
All right.
Yeah, so the epic journey.
Book of Lost Tales, not Unfinished Tales.
No, the Book of Lost Tales, Part 1. You'll understand what it's all about.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just take your word for that.
All right.
Okay.
I can live with that. All right.
Okay.
That's all for this episode. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Lise Yu,
Andrew T,
John R,
Shannon S,
Brian O,
Emilio P,
Zeke F,
James A,
James L,
Chris L,
Chuck F,
Asia V,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D,
Eric S,
Joey S,
Eric B,
Matt L,
Johanna T,
Ms. Anonymous,
Sam N,
Mike M,
I'm going to let you say that.
All right. Durenayir. Thank you all so
much. Durenayir.
Durenayir. I think I'm saying it correctly, but correct, you know, they'll send me a note. I know they will if I'm wrong about it. Or hopefully confirm for me if I got it right. All right. Thank you all so much for being our patrons. And we also want to give a shout out to those celebrating their patron anniversary in February. Asia V.
Chuck F.
Eric B.
Ish of the Hammer.
John R.
Magnus V.
Cat L.
David Bigwood.
And Sarah M.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you to all who listened, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.